Frank DeFord has joined us on Sports Byline USA. We're talking about his memoir. It's an excellent read, and you'll learn not only about Frank's life, but also about the field of sports writing, sports broadcasting, the time in which he lived and he wrote in, and still does as well. It's called Overtime, My Life as a Sports Writer. As you moved along in sports writing, tell me a little bit about how your style developed, Frank, because I know Sports Illustrated at that time was more of an essay-oriented magazine. Tell me a little bit about how you developed your style of writing.
Well, I said, Ron, and I mean this, I was a cocky kid, and I wasn't afraid to take chances. And I think that's part of how my style developed was that I would try new things. I give you an example. Anybody from Los Angeles remembers the great Jim Murray, right? And Jim, in the L.A. Times, when he would go to a city, would write an article putting down the city. You know, if he went to St. Louis, he'd rap St. Louis. If he went to Baltimore, he'd rap Baltimore, right? And so one time when I was covering the playoffs, I remember I did a takeoff on Jim Murray. I rapped Los Angeles. And the magazine bought it. They said, okay. I mean, so I took those kind of chances. And at the same time, I was sort of two different people. On the one hand, I was covering mostly basketball, but also some baseball and some tennis. And on the other hand, I was starting to write longer pieces about profiles, about people. And I think that's where I was really learning how to write. And I can't tell you what I did consciously to develop a style. It just sort of, you know, just working on it. It's like a guy in the batting cage just, you know, working on his movements until he could hit the ball a little bit better, and that's what I did.
How much did sports at the particular times that you were working, the various decades, and the athletes that you cover reflect society in general and the things that were going on in our society?
Well, that was one of the wonderful things. I mean, sports is always great because there's always good games and there's always heroes and there's always goats and all that sort of thing. But in the 1960s, so much was changing. There was new leagues, whole new leagues. The free agency was coming in. There were strikes. Billie Jean King was bringing women into sports, right?
Right.
For the first time, we were really taking an interest in international sport. Everything was being turned upside down, and the athletes really mirroring society. I mean, remember, this is a time when young people all over America were raising Cain, right? Well, the athletes were young people, and so they were too. They were outspoken, a lot of them, and so it was a terrific time to be writing about sports because sports mirrors society, and that's another break I got. I was at the right place at the right time. I mean, I can ultimately went to South Africa with Arthur Ashe when he broke the color line there. That was a real story, not a sports story. So it was a fabulous kindergarten for me to go to, let me tell you.
In the book, you give particular attention to your cherished friendship with Arthur Ashe, and I remember the interviews that I did with him because he came out with a trilogy of books about the history of the black athlete, and I will always cherish our long conversation as he enumerated that history and everything. But what was it that made that relationship for you special?
You know, it was just two guys who liked each other. And the fact that he was a tennis player and I was a writer, and the fact that he was black and I was white, really, after a while, didn't enter into it. When we were together, it was just two guys hanging out, you know. We had a lot of the same interests, and we had the same sense of humor. Arthur, you know, he died tragically, and he was involved in a lot of serious things, but he was a very witty, you know, he was fun to be around. And we just had fun together, and that's it. I mean, why do people become friends? Because they like each other. It was as simple as that. And then I also, beyond that, I admired him, and he admired me. You know, he admired me as a writer. I admired him as an athlete. And so it was just a terrific relationship right up until the day that he died so very, very young.
Frank, I know you feel as I do that I don't know of any other profession that lends itself to such great stories, because if you happen to be a bank teller, I don't think you have the type of stories you have in sports. If you happen to be a truck driver, you probably don't. Now, I'm not trying to put down those professions, but there's something about the personalities of athletes, the money that owners have, just the times and the atmosphere in which sports exists in, that lends itself to great stories. Am I correct?
Oh, it's a story. Look, I've said, Ron, many times, if you can't make it as a sports writer, then you really ought to get out of the profession of writing, because it lends everything. You've got glamour, you've got drama, you've got, like you say, interesting characters. These are performers, remember, so you're going to get an extraordinary percentage of them are going to be extroverts or well-spoken or funny, you know, and you just got so many characters and such a canvas to paint on. Just absolutely everything you say is very true. It's a storytelling bonanza, and that's why sometimes I get mad today when all you read is statistics. I'm saying, don't tell me 58 more numbers. Give me some blood and guts. You know, give me some heart. Let me know what this guy is like, not what he's batting, you know?
Your coverage, of course, Muhammad Ali, Ted Williams, Bob Feller, Pete Rose, Billie Jean King, Jack Nicklaus, Tom Watson, and so many others. What did you find is the commonality among the great, the truly great athletes?
It's corny to say it, but, boy, it's not just that they want to win. It's that they want to do their best. Yeah, you know, and then they understand that sometimes your best is not going to be good enough, that somebody else is going to better it. But the great ones don't want to be embarrassed. They want to do their best. I remember both Ted Williams and Bob Feller telling me at separate times that 3 or 4 days before they were going to face each other, you know, Williams could look at the schedule and he knew the Indians were coming to town, and on Tuesday I'm going to bat against Bob Feller, thinking, I'm looking forward to this. This is it. And Feller is thinking the same thing. I'm going to face Ted Williams. And I mean, that's the classic kind of thinking that the great champions have. I'm going to face the best and I'm going to be the best. And that's it. And everybody says they want to win. Well, sure, everybody wants to win, but it's doing your best, which is what really sets you apart.
We only have a couple minutes left, but I want to ask you that as you take a look, time moves on and so does sports like everything else. And I'm wondering whether you lament to any degree how television, big money, new media, all of that has changed the face of sports and maybe the way we report on it.
You know, Ron, when I was a kid writer, I hated the old guys who would say, but you should have been here in the 20s, you should have been here in the 30s. And, you know, always saying the past was better. And the past was fabulous, but you just can't live back there. I just look at it this way. The past was different than the present, and we just have to deal with what we've got. And television has changed things, and the internet has changed things, and bloggers have changed things, and tweeters have changed things, but that's what we've got. And so the best time, I think, for anybody is when they're a kid, because you're still dreaming, right? And it's easier to impress you. But beyond that, the best time is the present. Whenever the present is.
Is there a particular moment in the long years that you've covered sports that is emblazoned in Frank DeFord's mind, one that really sticks with him?
It's funny. I was thinking about that when I wrote the book. And there were so many things. But I remember one moment more vividly than any other. Ron, it was the 1992 Olympics and in Barcelona, and I'm standing down by the running track. And Carl Lewis was the anchor man on the United States team. And the United States was 20 meters ahead of everybody else. So it wasn't like a competition. It wasn't a race. And that baton goes to Carl Lewis. And he zips past me. And just the vision of that guy, he He's running with such beauty and grace and power and athleticism. For some reason, that moment, and it's only 8.5 seconds, it really is a moment, that more than anything else sticks in my mind as the absolute epitome of sports. That's it.
Are you happy with the way the book came out, Frank?
Oh, yeah. You know, I look back now and I say, oh, I forgot to put that in. I wish I'd changed that. Yeah, you know, you always second-guess yourself. Yeah, I'm happy that it came out and people seem to like it very much, and that's the real measure.
Frank, I want to thank you very much. Congratulations on the book. We're going to make it a selection of the month on the Sports Byline Book Corner. Take care, my friend.
Ron, I thank you very much for that, and I'm glad you liked it, and I'm delighted to talk to you again.
Frank DeFord with us again. Check out the memoir. It's called Overtime, My Life as a Sports Writer. We continue with more of you and Sports Byline.